Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back to hour number three of FST. Thanks for joining us on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening on TuneIn, on iHeartRadio, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. We appreciate it. And we're going to turn the page over to basketball for a moment because NBA had a wild week. It's been they dominate the offseason, their own offseason, as they do each and every year. There's obviously been a lot of big moves, but the final shoe to drop, or the final major shoe to drop, did happen earlier this week when Kawhi Leonard was traded to the Toronto Raptors. So who better to bring in than a Canadian basketball expert, Josh Eberle. Josh, thanks for joining the program.
Yeah, no worries. Happy to be here.
So Kawhi Leonard wanted to go to L.A., and the San Antonio Spurs made sure to send him to the coldest weather city in the NBA. So what are your initial thoughts on it, value for both teams? Because Toronto obviously takes a big risk in keeping him long term, but the Spurs maybe didn't get every single last ounce of value they could have gotten out of him. But what are your thoughts on it in general?
I think overall the Raptors are the big winner here. Simply put, elite talent in the NBA does not move to cities like Toronto, Minnesota, Orlando, Denver. You know, if you're one of these other markets that hasn't been known as a title contender, that hasn't had superstars constantly in the past, you know, your opportunity to get guys like Kawhi Leonard is very thin. So they took a risk. You know, they traded the franchise player, they traded the fan favorite. And, you know, it's made some Canadians rather upset. But the bottom line is Kawhi Leonard gives the Toronto Raptors a better chance to win a championship this year than DeMar DeRozan does over the next three. So I think, you know, whatever the risk, whether he leaves, whether he doesn't, you know, this was the right move to bring the Raptors forward, or at least have a chance to do that. They banged their head against the wall 5 years in a row. It was time for a shakeup. On the Spurs end, I think they could have got more. If I was them, I would have been looking more at a rebuilding package. But given the situation and how little leverage they had and how difficult Kawhi Leonard made things for them, I think they did okay getting an all-NBA player back in DeMar DeRozan. You know, he's not an ideal fit in today's NBA, but he's a talented player. And you'd think with Greg Popovich, he'd continue to grow.
Josh, I want to ask you in terms of the way the Raptors went about this, because obviously bringing in Kawhi Leonard is something that they really couldn't pass up on, especially with LeBron being gone. This is probably their best chance, and maybe last chance, to actually come out of the Eastern Conference. But what they did with DeMar in a week ago, promising him that he wasn't going anywhere, I think they might have long-term kind of screwed themselves, because I now don't know how free agents could really trust this organization after pulling that type of move. What was your reaction to that?
I'll say this first. It's now been rather disputed whether he was told or whether he was promised, as he claimed, that he wouldn't be traded, or whether there was some sort of miscommunication. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what happened in that room. If they lied to him, that's not okay. These are grown men. You should be able to look DeMar in the eye and say, you know, we didn't throw your name out there. We might have an offer we can't pass up, but it's not like we have you on the trade block. Whatever you have to say to level with the guy, I think you owed it to him. So if that was the case, that sucks. I'm sorry that they did that. On the other hand, you know, Anthony Morrow can blow smoke all he wants, Lou Williams. Who's coming to Toronto? You know, like fans, analysts, everyone always looks at cap money like it's this huge asset, but for teams like Toronto, it is. The two biggest free agents in history are Hedo Turkoglu and Damari Carroll. So in 21 seasons as a franchise, 23 seasons as a franchise, Hedo Turkoglu and Damari Carroll, I'm sorry that LeBron is sitting in Los Angeles. Man, I was really considering them in 2021, but the way they treated my boy DeMar, I'm not going there now. Like, yeah. I just don't buy it.
I think that that makes total sense. In the way that... Yeah. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just then wanted to follow up because regardless, they now, I think I would say, have the best player in the East. Maybe some would make that argument for Giannis. I also like that they bought back Danny Green in this deal. I think overall it's an absolute home run for Toronto. I know we have a lot to see before we get to the season, but right now, do you feel like Toronto is the best team in the Eastern Conference?
I think it's tough. I mean, you know, like Kawhi already being in Toronto, you know, meeting up with Masai, the report that he's warming up to the city. I think it's positive. Like, this is a guy. I mean, there are four players in the history of the NBA that have won Defensive Player of the Year and MVP. David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Kevin Garnett, Michael Jordan. You know, Kawhi Leonard's won Defensive Player of the Year twice. He finished second and third in MVP voting the last 2 years he was healthy. He made the All-NBA first team over Kevin Durant. Like, this is one of the three or four best players in the NBA if he's healthy in that, and he's that guy, which I'm hoping that he is, you know, for the Raptors' sake. If he's that guy, the type of lineups they can run with Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Serge Ibaka, they're going to be defensive stronghold. I think it, you know, at the moment I have them in Boston neck and neck, but if Kawhi is at 100%, he's the guy that we saw in 2016, 2017, just giving teams buckets in the playoffs before Zaza took them out, I could definitely see a path to them going to the finals.
So you mentioned the defensive side of the ball, which is a good transition for me to talk about the Spurs. And I think it's fair to say they're going to be challenged defensively with the lineup of an aging Gasol, Aldridge, DeRozan, Murray, Patty Mills. I think we're going to – and Rudy Gay just re-signed there. So I think we're going to see some struggles with them defensively, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I can see this going one of two ways. There is a lot of faith in that organization for good reasons. I mean, obviously, they've been the exemplar over two decades. But, you know, Greg Popovich has gone through some pretty heavy personal loss the last year.
Sure.
He's had a star ask out two off seasons in a row. He held out. He just dealt with a year-long holdout. He's thinking about retirement in 2020. There is part of me that feels like maybe Pop is like, I'm just going to ride this. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe like the work ethic is what it'll always be, and they'll figure it out. But there was a stat the other day on top of the defense. I mean, the defense is going to be a struggle. Like, aside from Murray, they don't have one plus defender on that team right now. But the shooting. So their combined starting lineup, or projected starting lineup of Gasol, Gay, Aldridge, DeRozan, and Murray hit 205 three-pointers last year. You know, and that being a career high for DeRozan, getting his 89. There were nine players in the NBA who had more than that on their own. So shooting and defense, which is what everyone's trying to win championships right now, is not in the cards for the Spurs. So very interested to see how that looks.
For San Antonio, I look at it where I think regular season success can be on the table because they traditionally beat up on the bad teams. And, I mean, they won 47 games last year virtually without Kawhi Leonard, I think two or three games off being the three seed. So I think they've got a great chance to still be a four or five seed in the West. My bigger concern with them is kind of, and with what you just laid out, I don't know how this team wins playoff basketball games.
Yeah, and you know, it's very, very interesting to me from the perspective of they have two All-NBA players. I mean, DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge both made All-NBA teams last year. They both got MVP votes last year. Those are guys that, you know, in theory are top 15 or around there. That's a lot of talent on paper, but it's like you have a job. Let's say you're a gardener and you really need a rake and a shovel and a fresh bag of manure to start this garden, but Pop's got two shovels. Like, he just has two tools that he's doubled up. I mean, he has two guys that take mid-range jumpers and don't play great defense and want to have the ball in their hands. And it's just such a weird fit in today's NBA.
It's like 80s hoops. It's like an 80s hoops team. They'd be really good in the 80s. They just would foul people hard and hand check, and that would be their style of defense as opposed to what it is now. But again, we're with Josh Eberle. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Eberle, Eberley is how you spell Eberle. And he writes for at Hoop Mag. You find him on at Hoop Mag, and that's found on Twitter at Hoop Mag. So a couple other storylines, obviously, this week. The Carmelo Anthony thing seems like it's all roads leading to Houston. It seems it'll be that way. But there's more question marks about Houston now than there were 2 months ago. They lost Trevor Ariza, who's a good defender for them. They bring in Carmelo, who struggled in his backup slash third wheel role in OKC. So what the Rockets are worse to me coming into this next season than they were.
Yeah, they really are. You know, they haven't even figured out things with Clint Capella, which what are you doing? Like, you know, you buy this team, you're on the record. The owner is on the record for saying, you know, if you want to win a championship, you have to go into the deep into the luxury tax that's part of, you know, winning in today's NBA. You believe, I don't believe, they believe if Chris Paul is healthy, they're advancing into the finals, probably winning a championship over Cleveland. And yet when it comes time to pay everybody, run it back, like, where's that energy? Like, where is that commentary that should have propelled you just to bring everybody back and run it back if you truly believe that? You know, Ariza is a big loss for them. I know he shot 0 of 12 in Game 7. I know he's probably past his prime, but he was their best defender in Kevin Durant. And you lose Bamute as well. And now you're messing around with Clint Capella's money, and who knows what that relationship looks like. And I mean, that's the last domino of the offseason, honestly. Like, what are they going to do with Clint Capella? No one else has money, so they're kind of at this impasse. But, you know, and bringing Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony is a negative presence on both sides of the ball. Every time he puts the ball down, dribbles into double coverage, takes an ill-advised shot, takes the ball out of the hands of Harden and Paul, who you much prefer it to be with. I don't really understand this offseason for Houston. I think they've kind of opened the door for Los Angeles, Utah, Oklahoma City to hop them.
On terms of the Melo thing, because this has been going on for years now, where people think Olympic Melo is just going to become a thing. Olympic Melo doesn't exist. It's like the Loch Ness Monster. It's not just going, he's not going to just agree to start doing spot up threes all the time. And I think one of the biggest problems with this, Josh, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but Melo's probably going to start for this team because of the losses that they had throughout this offseason, which I think is going to make everything worse.
Yeah, I mean, this was a team that was really good defensively last year. You found a way to be a very good defensive team with James Harden because you let him play guys in the post and you had good defenders around him and Paul and Ariza and Tucker and Capella, and now you're going to throw a guy in like Melo who's just a pylon defense, hasn't gave an honest effort in there since probably 2013. And the other thing is, like, the one thing Melo did well last year was spot-up shooting. Like, his effective field goal percentage on spot-up shots off Russell Westbrook passes was, like, 57%, which is pretty rock solid. But he doesn't like to do that. Like, if Melo was going to play within that system and do what Ariza did on offense, which is swing to the corner, shoot when you get it, and otherwise stay out of the way, I think there might be some positive value from him, at least offensively. But the combination of him not playing defense and him wanting to do his own thing on offense, I just don't see the benefit. Like, I don't see what Houston sees here. You know, Daryl Morey is someone that we applaud over and over and over in the media for being a savvy GM, for being a smart guy, for his use of analytics. And his two additions this year are Michael Carter-Williams and Carmelo Anthony. And I'm just so confused in the switch of direction here.
It's really brutal. Just keep in mind, 2 months ago, when Carmelo was asked about coming off the bench wherever he landed next, he said it was out of the question. So that's where his head is at. Now, if Chris Paul can somehow get inside that brain of his and convince him that he's better off doing something else, it is one of his best friends in the entire league, then maybe they've got a shot. But I'm with you guys right now. I think it's a much worse team defensively, and if Carmelo is out there doing Carmelo things, then it's going to look ugly at times. So, again, we're with Josh Eberle. He's a member of the Pro Basketball Writers Association. I do want to get to one last guy because a good friend of mine, Drew Dinkmeyer, who is one of the writers at Daily Roto and is like an NBA DFS expert, is a diehard Bulls fan. And he is just sort of incensed as what's gone on these last couple of weeks, where they matched the Zach LaVine offer, so then they have a guy with a potentially degenerative knee condition that they've committed $80 million to, and then they gave 20 plus a $20 million option to Jabari Parker. So I don't really get what the Bulls are doing either.
Yeah, I mean, You need someone smarter than me to break that one down, because I don't know either. I get the Jabari Parker signing from, we're probably still not ready to be in the playoffs. Let's bring in a hometown kid with some upside. Really, it's only a 1-year deal if we don't want it to be a 2-year deal. Like, I think that's low risk enough on a 1-year thing where, like, the fan appeal and giving a guy that was drafted that high another chance makes sense. But they're going to play him out of position at the 3 instead of the 4. And you have LaVine. So really, you have two wings that like to take a bunch of jumpers and not play defense. So that's a weird pairing. Like, I do like what they did with Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. I think those guys are promising young bigs. But Chicago is kind of a seesaw. Like, oh, good move, bad move, good move, bad move. And okay. It's been like that for quite a few years now.
Yeah. Good stuff. Go ahead, Kev. One more quick
yeah,
one.
Josh, we're coming up against the clock, so it's just going to be a yes or no. Jimmy Butler is on the Timberwolves at the end of this coming season.
No.
I agree. Man, I agree. I think they got to figure out something. It's going to be a tough spot for Minnesota.
That's brutal. Well, I'm a Knicks fan, so I've got pipe dreams out there to rekindle with Jimmy and Kyrie and the whole crew getting together in New York once Porzingis is healthy. And we finally got a draft pick right, I think, with Kevin Knox. Do you think they got that one right?
I think Knox is going to be a player. I like Knox. I like the Hezonja pickup, too. I think Mario Hezonja is a guy who didn't get a fair shake in Orlando, and everyone that's left Orlando has done better.
Now we're talking. Oladipo, Hezonja. That's what I need. I need some Orlando cast-offs. Hopefully, Elfrid Payton will make something of himself. Good stuff. Bye, thanks, Josh. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. This is Josh Eberle. You can find him on Twitter at Josh Eberle, Eberley. We'll be right back on FST.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Sean Engel, our fabulous producer, he's getting a little creepy with the music, but I still like it. He's really mixing it up today. Okay. If you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against. Just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. So, all right, got a bunch of stuff going on. British Open is going on right now. Mm. Tommy Fleetwood making a charge there. Ricky Fowler in the mix. I was watching Tiger a little bit earlier. Maybe we'll do a little bit on that tomorrow. I don't know how much time we have on it. You're not a big golf guy no. anyway, K-Dubs, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Do you ever play?
No.
I mean, I don't really. So it's weird that I watch golf and I don't really play.
You're weird.
But let's see.
How was your concert?
Kevin Kisner, he's... Oh, it was fun. Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk about. It was fun. Greg Sussman, the host of BFFs during the week, and he does many, many things on this network. He was there as well, and we tried to connect, but I got there a little late, well before the concert, but I got there a little late. It was just kind of hard to catch up, and phone issues and all that kind of stuff. But I was bummed I didn't get a chance to catch up with him, but we sat in tons of traffic. For those of you that listen to the show on a regular basis, I saw Dave Matthews on Wednesday night. It was an awesome show. He's always great, and I enjoyed myself.
And just,
I was just, you know, like, it was fun. It was a good crowd. That's why I like Dave Matthews. It's a good crowd. He's amazing. And
how did the negotiations go for Tuesday? Were you home?
I didn't even bring it up. Like, I didn't even bring it up. I had no shot to go to that Foo Fighters concert. I did, to be fair, I did bring it up. And it was not well received. So I sort of dropped it. I really did bring it up, though. Just I almost did it more for, like, radio material and general joke material than anything else. I wanted to see what she would say. But, yeah, she was done. She's like, I don't think it's a good idea if you're going to stay over and after the Dave Matthews concert and for you to be out two nights in a row. I was like, all right, I guess that's done. Like, I wasn't really going to push. I'll just see the Foo Fighters the next time I can see them. I just, you know, I wasn't going to start a huge fight over something like that. And, but anyway, I had fun. It was a good time.
Happy for you.
I got made fun of by you and Corey Parson last week for going to see that concert.
You really did get made fun of by me. You were insecure about it for whatever reason.
Corey basically said I was a soccer mom for going to see that.
Corey, I didn't say anything about Corey. Corey will come for you no matter what.
Yep.
That's just how it is. I mean,
yep.
Corey, when I first started, Corey, yes. Ronis, and Scott used to basically, I think the show was designed for them to just see how long they could be mean to one another until someone got actually upset. They managed to never get upset. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that's how they interact with one another, no doubt. Now, my relationship with Scott is not like that. He and I are very respectful of one another. We have sort of disagreements, but we don't nice, cozy professional relationship. I don't get into it with Scott like that, but
I can't wait to
Corey
talk to the king.
Scott, they're like brothers. It's like a brotherly thing, you know, mostly harmless, but sometimes they go over the line with one another. And Scott Engel, the king, Scott Engel, will be on in the next segment because we're talking Seahawks and he really should be on to talk Seahawks. My fault for not planning it in advance, but he's doing one on the fly for us, which we appreciate. So we talked hoops.
Yeah.
We talked NFC West. Did we miss anything on NFC West? You know, I'm just trying to think position by position. You know, it's crazy. George Kittle is easily the best tight end option in this division.
Yeah.
Which means there's not a lot of talent at the tight end position this year for fantasy.
I wanted to just mention one thing.
Running backs, you got McKinnon. Hang on. You got McKinnon, Penny. McKinnon, Penny, Gurley, Johnson. Two absolute superstars. And two guys that have pretty high expectations. You got all four running backs are in the top, like, 15. That's a lot. You know, Penny's the lowest ranked, but he's still going around 16th running back. So there's a lot of value there. At wide receiver, Marquise Goodwin and Pierre Garçon. You got Doug Baldwin, who's kind of a man on an island. I want to get Scott's thoughts really on. He was high on Tyler Lockett a couple of years ago. He took a beating for that, but, you know, whatever. You get some wrong. But I'm curious if he thinks Brandon Marshall is, if there's any value there at all. And the other receiver, Larry Fitzgerald, obviously, top flight there. Christian Kirk, you like him, but I'm telling you that he's a rookie wide receiver, and those guys very rarely produce. And on that offense, he's not a guy I'm going to take a bet on. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah,
you're playing a little bit of the volume. You're playing a little bit of the volume game with me, though.
I love playing volume game. I think, honestly, it's underrated. Like, if they throw the ball 450 times.
Opportunities are king.
Well, it should be. Opportunities are king. But then you got to look at Christian Kirk and see the value there. Where do you think that he would come in? What is the low-end expectation of him on this team in targets? Fifth? Like, that's the lowest end.
He'll be fifth.
Huh?
Yeah, if he's fifth, he's probably got hurt.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think you're looking at a guy that's going to be third or fourth on this team in targets. And they're a team that looks to be set up to have to throw the ball a decent amount. So I think there's value there. And again, I like their quarterbacks. Typically a team that has this poor of an outlook, you shouldn't like the quarterback situation. I do. In a way, I don't like, we have time to go through all this and I don't want to get hot takey at all. But I could see my, I could talk myself into Arizona being a 500 team. And if they were in the AFC, I could talk myself into almost any NFC team being the sixth seed in the AFC because that is the state of the AFC. I think Arizona is.
You're the one that told me about all the pass rushes that they're going to be facing. I think they're going to, it's going to be tough.
Oh, for sure.
But I don't think, what I struggle with is when I see Arizona has the longest odds in the entire league to make the playoffs, I don't think they're the worst team. Do you know what I mean? It's just a matter of circumstances.
Well, are they the worst?
I think they can be competitive.
Are they the worst team in the NFC? That's one of the things that I've struggled with.
In the NFC?
Yeah, because the NFC is so much better than the AFC.
It's good.
If you go through it, Arizona, it's not a slight if you said that's the worst team in the NFC. I don't know if I would say that.
I think they are.
I think, off the top of my head, Tampa is in for a really rough one. I actually think that Seattle could be worse than them. This is why I want to talk to Scott, because I think that he can hopefully help find like some type of balance and middle ground with that. But I understand if I told you that the five worst teams were in the AFC, it might not be crazy. Or four of the five were in the AFC. It might not be crazy.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think Arizona's just kind of caught in the wash with two teams, really. One in particular improving themselves greatly, and then the Niners really quickly rebuilding what was a struggling team for a bunch of years. So
I have a dynasty question.
And then the quarterbacks. You got three valuable, really valuable quarterbacks, top 15 in my estimation, quarterbacks, Wilson, Garoppolo, and Goff. Go ahead, dynasty.
It's just me spitballing. It doesn't necessarily fit in, but there was, I don't know if you had seen it, ESPN did this big piece there, all under 25 team. Did you see that by chance?
Under 25 team
football
for the NFL.
Yeah.
So, I saw some of it. I'd have to bring it up to. But I'd have to bring it up.
You don't have to. The big controversy was the two running backs, Gurley, no controversy. The second was Barkley, and everybody was like, "So Ezekiel Elliott and Kamara don't play football anymore." And I understand why they feel that way. And I think in terms of that ranking, that's difficult. But if we were talking just completely starting from scratch, dynasty leagues, Zeke, Kamara, Barkley, where would you land within those three guys? It's very difficult. I mean, they're we're talking redraft. You're talking three guys that are all going within the first eight picks, nine, 10 picks. So I know it's very difficult. But it was something that was interesting to me because it was debated, you know, within the national media a little bit, just saying like, come on, listen, this kid hasn't taken a snap yet. Zeke, Kamara, I understand that. But fantasy dynasty leagues, I think that is an interesting conversation.
It is. And here's what I'll say. And George Kurtz and I used to talk about this a lot. I always try to look at dynasty leagues with like a 5-year window. But realistically, it is shorter than that because, frankly, a lot of dynasty leagues fall apart. People don't follow up on them. So you got to go for the win now. Okay. There isn't a particular advantage to building some long-term team like you think you're Rick Spielman in Minnesota and you're building a real franchise. You're trying to win your fantasy football league now. You have the exact same weighted opportunity going into year one. So what are you drafting all kinds of rookies for? Now, I've seen guys do that and then be bad for a couple of years, and then it all sort of comes together in year three. You know, I'm in a dynasty league that's in its seventh season, so it's going pretty strong. 32 teams in that thing, so it's taken a lot to manage it. But I think you got to go for now, and the guy now is Zeke.
Okay.
I love Kamara this year.
That's fair. I have questions
and
about
Barkley. I like Barkley as a player. I think he's going to be amazing. And honestly, if you could argue all three of them to me, but I would tell you that Barkley would decidedly be third there because the Giants offensive line just isn't as good as the other two. Saints have a pretty good offensive line, and the Dallas is one of the best, if not the best, in the entire league. So I think you go Zeke now. But if you argued that Kamara was a better option for this year than Zeke, I wouldn't beat you up over it. I just think Zeke gets a slight edge there because he's going to see the ball a ton, mm-hmm. and they are going to try and run the ball a ton to keep the defense off the field, and that's what got them successful 2 years ago. And then it all fell apart last year because the offensive line wasn't as good. It got hurt, and then Zeke was out for six games, and it really devolved into a mess. So,
yeah, if we can keep playing
that's my answer.
Topic pinball, I did have a hoops thing I wanted to ask you about. So, because the Lakers are putting together what people are calling the meme team. I appreciate it very much so. They just signed Mike Beasley, obviously Lance Stephenson, Rondo, LaVar Ball is there, JaVale McGee. All of this is setting up to be a ridiculous season. But I've seen some commentary that is, I just don't know if people have short-term memory loss. I don't know what's going on. I saw one person the other day say that on paper, the Lakers are not a 500 team. The Lakers are a stretch to be a top four seed. They could be close to not being in the playoffs. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what sport people watch. I don't know if this is if they're new here. This is LeBron. He just won 50 games last year with a worse team. Why in God's name are people not acknowledging that?
They're just hating on him, I think.
It doesn't
stuff.
Even seem hating. I saw the
and
one.
They know. They know. I think they just. I think the change is that they don't see any opportunity for him to get to the finals again. So I think they swing. The pendulum swings too far the other way, and they're like, "Well, yeah, they're not even going to get to the finals this year. They're probably stink." And yeah, maybe they are in the mix. Like maybe how many games did the Cavs win last year? 50.
50.
So 50 wins this year in the Western Conference, I think, would have had you as a three seed,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So let's just call it that. I think that's where they're at. I think they're somewhere between the three and the six, and the West is pretty jumbled up. I think it'll be just as jumbled up this year. But I think the Lakers see their way through that. I do think there's some complications there with all those combustible personalities. It is really incredible that all of those guys are on the same team. And that LeBron is on the same team as Lance Stephenson. Like, I really think it's odd to me that that he would allow that to happen. He'd be like, this guy is such a miscreant on the court. I don't want anything to do with him. I'm surprised he signed off on it, but we'll see. Josh Hart tearing up the summer league. That'll be interesting.
I mean,
it'll be fun to watch him play a little bit more. I like Josh Hart.
There is real talent on this roster. Like, they won 35 games last year. So if you let's just pretend they didn't add LeBron. If you account for natural progression of the sophomore season of Lonzo, Hart, Kuzma, year three of Brandon Ingram, plus some of these other pieces, we can laugh at it. But, I mean, JaVale McGee is like the most efficient player now ever since he played in Golden State. Rondo still adds an element of leadership and, I think, offensive control that you can appreciate. Lance is a mess. Lance is a mess. We can acknowledge that. And Michael Beasley.
Rondo is one of the least efficient offensive players in the history of the NBA, though.
But that's why I'm talking about leadership and control. Like, he still can have like 20 assists on any type of Wednesday.
Yeah.
And Beasley.
He doesn't have to start, obviously. No,
so. And he won't. And Beasley, again, this isn't a joke. He was better than Carmelo last year. So if you just take the natural progression of that roster from 35 wins, they're at least a 500 basketball team. So can LeBron get them 9 more wins? Of course. Plus, then how much better does he make the other guys through that? So, yeah, I think that pinning this team for 50 wins is certainly in play. Now, Golden State should get 60-plus. And, you know, the Jazz with a healthy Rudy Gobert and this version of Donovan Mitchell are on pace for 60-plus wins. And the Thunder with Roberson are the best defensive team in basketball. And they lost Melo, which is a complete addition. And now Dennis Schroeder's their sixth man. There's other good teams here. But this, like, oh, they're a 7th seed. Oh, they're not a 500 team on paper. What are you watching? I don't know what you're looking at. Because it's certainly not the same roster that I'm looking at. Because the one I'm looking at has LeBron on it.
Yeah. What other Western Conference teams do you think that got a lot better?
Denver.
Talked about Houston.
I really like Denver. I do. I think that it's going to be big for them to have Gary Harris be able to play You know, potentially full season. He missed some key games last year. Millsap missed like half the season, and that was their big offseason acquisition. So I just think naturally that will be important. And I think Jokic and Murray and Harris, younger guys, can be better. I thought bringing back Will Barton was important. And I actually think the Isaiah Thomas signing can be good. I think the unfortunate thing for them is this Michael Porter Jr. mess because he has another back surgery. Oh, people try to sit be on
no
the positive.
Timetable given.
Yeah. They try to be positive. They're, oh, breakthrough, might play this year. It's a mess. It's a complete mess. And I think they could have
no
really ended up wasting
no
that
timetable time. For basketball activities.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't want the Knicks to take him. It was reckless. And people thought that they were the team that could be reckless with it. But you know, I hope the guy comes back, but it's rough. How about the Kings? Good stuff. We could do an hour on them. So we'll come back. We're going to talk to Scott Engel about the Seahawks right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
We're back on FST. Final segment of the show. I know we're bringing Scott Engel in soon. See if he's lined up and ready to go. And we're going to talk Seahawks because, oh, good, he's here. So before he bring him in, I got to read this. Would you bake a cake without a recipe?
Yes.
Or go to trial without a lawyer? Yes. Then why would you go into your fantasy football draft without the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package? We have a fantasy Hall of Famer, Scott Engel, he's going to be on next, and the number one overall football accuracy expert on staff. That's Jake Seeley. They're writing articles, compiling rankings, projecting 2018 statistics, and answering your pre-draft questions. Our company has been nominated for over 60 fantasy industry awards in the last 3 years, and we're here to help you win. So go to rotoexperts.com, use code WINNER to get 10% off, and give us the honor of leading you to fantasy glory with the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Good stuff, and the leader of rotoexperts.com is on the phone right now. You can find him on Twitter at Scott E. Roto X. That's EX at the end. He's a managing director of RotoExperts.com. And you've listened to him Monday through Friday on Roto Experts in the Morning. Scotty, great to hear from you, buddy.
Oh, good to hear from you. And, you know, fine work by the producer. You know, knowing what kind of music to play to bring me in, too.
no bias.
Scott's very own. No bias whatsoever. Sean Engel on the ones and twos. But good to hear from you, Scotty. We were talking NFC West today, and we thought who better to bring on than you. We had Brandon Williams on. He was talking about the Niners, but we got into the Seahawks, and Kevin absolutely wanted to have you on, as did I, to talk a little bit about this season because it's obviously a lot of transition that's happened in this offseason. And the first question I want to ask you before we get into the fantasy implications is – what are your current expectations for the Earl Thomas scenario?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Fred. You know, I will be writing fantasy on Seahawks.com for Roto Experts again starting in August. So looking forward to that while doing the exclusive Edge package. Enter the King at checkout for a special discount on the package. And, you know, there's a lot of wide-ranging opinions on you know, what's going to happen, but I think ultimately what's going to happen is the team's not going to give in to any trade demands because I don't think they're going to get what they seek in return, and that ultimately, you know, he's not going to leave the money on the table, and, you know, Earl Thomas will probably show up, you know, especially important not only for the Seahawks, for those of you who play in IDP leagues as well. You know, the guy is still the best free safety in the game.
Scott, the big question always with Seattle, the offensive line. A number of years, we've had conversations about it. You say, yeah, it may not be as bad as everyone says. And I totally understand why you say it. This year, similar optimism, or is this guaranteed to be one of the three worst in the league?
I don't know if it's guaranteed to be one of the three worst in the league. You know, now you get Dwayne Brown for the full season. And, you know, they added DJ Fluker, who's a really good run blocker. Not as good as the run as he is against the pass, but when you have somebody as elusive as Russell Wilson, maybe you can get away with that a little. I don't think it's quite as bad as last year. I don't think it's going to be in the top half either. I think there's a potential for it to be certainly more of an adequate unit. And I think Justin Britt, you know, every year gets better at center. So I think it's a better line this year. You know, they brought in a new offensive line coach, Mike Solari, and they're also changing, you know, the way they block as well. So, you know, there's a lot to be seen there with the offensive line.
I was heaping praise upon Russell Wilson earlier in the show. He's obviously a top three ranked QB. I don't see any way to argue against that.
There is,
but do me that favor. Explain to me how he could maybe falter a little bit this season.
I think fantasy-wise, you know, not in terms of the NFL, you could still say he's a top four quarterback, but I think the Seahawks want to go back to what they did, you know, during their best years, which was having a better balance of run and pass and having Russell Wilson pick his spots rather than having to carry the entire offense on his back. Now, you know, some average fans will say, you know, a quarterback really doesn't prove himself until he carries the team on his back. You don't want the quarterback carrying the team on your back. You want him to have offensive balance. They drafted Rashad Penny to be a three-down running back and to have more offensive balance. And if they can establish more of a running game, Russell Wilson will not have to carry as much of an offensive load this year as he did last year.
I fear that I may have just got my answer from what you just said there in terms of them trying not to throw the football as much. But I said when we were initially talking about Seattle, I was just looking through the skill position players, especially the pass catchers. And I said, is there a chance that Doug Baldwin cracked the top five in targets? He was at 16th last year. He is comfortably better than everybody else there, Scott. How high on the end of targets could we see Doug Baldwin get?
Doug Baldwin's still going to get, you know, he's been with Russell Wilson since his first game in the NFL.
Can we get top,
you know,
five?
The opener against the Arizona Cardinals in his first game, you know, it was a missed pass to Doug Baldwin in the end zone for a loss. And they've always really connected. But I think when you look at, when you want to say something like, you know, the other guys are not established and that can make Doug Baldwin top five, that's not how Russell Wilson operates. Russell Wilson always spreads the ball around. He's not going to zone in on one receiver all of the time. And while the other names aren't well known to everybody, you know, Russell Wilson's familiar with a lot of them. Tyler Lockett, Amari Darboe is a guy that, you know, he started to work with last year. You know, we're going to see Ed Dixon get mixed in a little bit at tight end. They're going to throw the ball out of the backfield. Doug Baldwin's not going to get enough. They're also going to more establish the run, like I said. So to see Doug Baldwin as a top five receiver, I think, is a super stretch.
Yeah, I mean, they've not typically been a extremely high volume passing team. And to Scott's point, I think they are possibly even going to regress a little bit as far as the number of pass attempts to get Penny involved. Do you think it would be, look, I said this a couple of times in this show, I'll say for the third time, I never espouse having to have a handcuff, but there's a couple of teams in this NFC West landscape where it might make sense, like Matt Breida to Jerick McKinnon on the Niners. And do you think Chris Carson is the guy that you'd want to tag to Rashad Penny just in case?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's healthy. He's back. The team likes him a lot. You know, he showed some signs last year of being able to run well, and which behind wasn't a good offensive line. You know, and he was very tenacious when he got to the second level. And because of his tenacity, he was able to get to the second level on his own, which was kind of impressive for a game or two. So he'll definitely be the handcuff. It's very interesting, you know, C.J. Procise gets injured so much that he's become a complete fantasy afterthought. But if he could somehow stay healthy, you know, he's going to catch passes and have a Theo Riddick roll out of that backfield. And when he's healthy, he's as explosive as Chris Thompson is.
You know, it's an interesting point there, Scott, and I say this to people a lot. As much as you can look at rankings and stuff going into drafts in the next 6 weeks or so, you really should always take a quick look at the previous year's ADP rankings, because there's always a few guys that get forgotten or get lost in the wash. And CJ Procise was a guy that you and I talked about last preseason that we liked a lot. Opportunity to catch 50, 60 passes. And now because he got hurt again, people have forgotten about him. But he could be that guy. You could get him in the 16th round probably, or just have him ready to go on the waiver wire. But he's somebody to not completely forget about.
Yeah, and, you know, at receiver, like I mentioned, Amari Darboux, you know, this is a guy that could really step up and, you know, be a very, very deep fantasy sleeper. You know, they like him. You know, he can go up and get 50-50 balls, which Wilson likes to throw a lot. You know, he's got some separation gear, got some good leaping ability. So Amari Darboux is a name to really stash away, especially if you're playing in like a 20 or 22-round draft.
Well, Scotty, let me ask you, though, right? Because if Doug Baldwin isn't going to creep into the top five in targets because Russ is going to spread it around, then Tyler Lockett's got to have a lot of value there. Because Paul Richardson's out last year, 80 targets. I mean, Tyler Lockett's numbers have to go up, right?
If Tyler Lockett can stay healthy, which has always, you know, been an issue for him. When I say Wilson's going to spread it around, it could be a different guy every down. It could be a different guy every week. I don't know if there's one particular player to locate that you might be able to depend on fantasy-wise. Like I said, Darboux has sleeper potential. Lockett, you know, we've seen flashes of him in the past, but I don't think you can consistently depend on him on a week-to-week basis. You know, 1 week it could be Baldwin 5 for 120 and 2 touchdowns. The next week it could be Baldwin maybe, you know, 3 catches for 40 yards and Amari Darboux catches a touchdown pass and CJ Procise does something. I think it's going to be very unpredictable week to week what happens outside of Baldwin. I think it's almost like in fantasy baseball when you talk about a closer situation. You know, who's going to step up? Well, you're going to have to see that on the go. The best quarterbacks in the NFL, I believe, are guys who spread it around, and Wilson is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's going to hit the open man. On one play, it could be Tyler Lockett. The next play could be Darboux. The next, it could be Nick Vinette. You know, you just don't know.
Well, Scott, one guy you did not mention was Brandon Marshall. And is he fantasy viable? Do you think he's washed? Do you think he won't fit? What are your thoughts on Marshall?
On purpose, I didn't mention Brandon Marshall. I think, you know, he's at the end of his career. I think we saw the best of him end a few years ago with the Jets. Personally, I was thinking that Dez Bryant would be a better pick up for them, but I guess they didn't want to spend the money, and Dez is still sitting out there. To me, you know, Brandon Marshall's more of like a player coach than a factor.
I agree completely with you on that. On the defensive side of the ball, so the more familiar names have left and may be leaving. It would be a bummer with the Earl Thomas thing because, as you said, he's still one of the best players in football. From an IDP standpoint, he was a top 12 safety, just to give folks a sense on a point-per-game basis. But at the same time, they have been backfilling some of the veterans with very high draft picks. Frank Clark, Jaron Reed, Nazir Jones, Rasheem Green, all of these guys. And Bobby Wagner, obviously, and K.J. Wright are still there in the middle. I just get the sense that because people aren't as familiar with some of the players on this team, maybe they're dismissing how good this defense could be. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think it still can be a very good defense. Not elite like it used to be. You know, right. It's ranked 13th in my fantasy ranks on rotoexperts.com in the exclusive edge package. Enter the king and check out for a special discount. Anytime you still have Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas there, you know, that's a defense that you can't disrespect. Frank Clark has really come on the defensive line, and, you know, Jaron Reed can really make a name for himself this year. And, you know, then you can't forget K.J. Wright either. So, you know, I think if health is there, they're still going to be quite a good defense in the secondary. Byron Maxwell's adequate. You have Shaq Griffin had a really good rookie year. So this is not a defense you're going to be able to pick on, but it's not going to be elite either for fantasy purposes.
So then give me the outlook, Scott. Seattle is a team last year. They were close to the playoffs, but they didn't make it back. This is a division that I think is much improved. Playoffs, 500, could it be a bad year for them? What do you think?
Well, USA Today had them at 4-12.
I'm guessing you don't.
A little bit of a reach. Yeah, there's a little bit of a reach, I think. When you have guys like Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas, and Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright on the roster, and Doug Baldwin, that's not a four-win squad. That said, and look, you know this, Mike, I don't base schedule analysis on the previous year. I always look ahead. They do have a very tough schedule this year when you look at it. So I think I think I'm looking at about a 500 season here. They will be in playoff contention. What you can't predict is, and when everybody does this, and you know Kevin knows this as an Eagles fan too. You know, I was predicting that the Eagles weren't going to go to the Super Bowl because of certain things on paper, etc. You can't predict execution. You know, and you know it comes down to execution. They still have guys like Wilson, Wagner, and Thomas, who you know these guys have played in Super Bowls and big championship games. You know, in certain moments, they have the ability to step up. If you look at them on paper, I think they're about a 500 ball club, but when they have certain players like they do, there is the upside for them to be a wild card team. So I think they're between a 500 ball club and a wild card team.
Good stuff. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Scott E. Roto X. That's EX at the end. And go to rotoexperts.com and enter code the King for a special discount on the exclusive Edge package. He's got tons of stuff in there. He's got his rankings in there. Scott, thanks for the time this morning. Appreciate it. And I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right. Thanks for having me this morning. And you guys continue to do a nice job on the show there.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks,
appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. And okay, we Kevin. Will. Yeah. And so the reality for this team, as Scott said, is it's a team in transition, but we could see them potentially challenge for a playoff spot. To his point about the schedule after the bye week, which is in week 7, the beginning of the schedule isn't brutal, but after the bye week in week 7, it's at Detroit, then the Chargers, then at the Rams, then Green Bay, then at Carolina, then the Niners, the Vikings, at the Niners, Chiefs. That's a tough little 7-week stretch in there, and that could be really brutal for a team that is in some level of transition, especially if Thomas moves on here in the next month.
Well, look, they ended up with what's ranked the 30th tough schedule, or the what would be the third hardest schedule by Warren Sharp. Again, that was back in May. I do think something that Scott said there is very important, is trying to predict execution. He says you can't. I think you have to see there if you can find ways to predict execution. Because if you look at a roster and you're saying, I like what's there, but I don't know how they close out games, that can be the difference from a 5-win team and an 8-win team. Like I might look, one team that I feel that way, I feel like the Jets might be able to play close football games, but I don't feel great about them winning a lot of those games because Darnold is going to be so young and things like that.
True. So we've got about a minute left. I wanted you to rank these teams. Where? How do you think it ends up, Kevin?
Right now, as of today, I put them Rams, Seahawks, Niners, Cardinals with a sizable gap between the Rams and the rest of the division.
I disagree with you. I'm going to have the Niners over the Seahawks there, but I do think that's close. So we're going to come back tomorrow.